And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I want to wish you a Happy New Year. I know that you're celebrating Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
By the way, did you know that Rosh Hashanah started as a Babylonian holiday?
No.
It was adopted by the Jews. The essence of it was Babylonian. Babylonians believed that on this day, a bunch of gods every year got together in a conclave. And in that conclave, they reviewed the past life of every human being and decided what the next year would be like. And that's exactly what the Jews took over.
Well,
of course, they got rid of the conclave because they only had one god.
Interestingly, the new year starts on the first day of the seventh month.
Ah, but the first day of the seventh month is the Sabbath of Sabbaths.
Yes.
Right?
Well, not Yom Kippur, it's the Sabbath.
Only if it falls on the Sabbath, right.
Well.
Right. Right.
But, all these old story, there's the flood story is in a lot of ancient civilizations.
Exactly, right.
And, that's how things got adapted. Look at the Romans adapted from the Greeks.
Who probably adapted from the Egyptians. That's right. But all that to the side, and all this holiday making to the side, and all the celebrating to the side, the big political story, it seems to me, today is the strike of the auto workers. That's no picnic, and that's no holiday.
Nope. And, in previous times, we kind of grew up with strikes. In the 30s and the post-war, the 50s, you had these large industrial strikes. You had the auto workers, you had the steel workers, would go on strike periodically. And then the unions started losing, in private industry, started losing membership.
Right.
Of course, we had the coal miners here. I mean, this is where the union movement really started in our area. But as things moved to cheaper labor down south, where they had right to work for less laws.
Right.
At
least three of the current Republican candidates for president, for the presidential nomination, won a national right to work law. Haley, and her South Carolina cohort.
Scott,
they both, and Ramaswamy, they've spoken up for the need to have a national right to work law. Haley said her vision of the world is a world without unions. How's that? That's the new vision of the Republican Party. Of course, that was what J.P. Morgan wanted, too. That's the old Republican.
It's not a new vision.
Right.
In fact, they didn't have to worry about it because the unions had gotten so small. But now the unions are feeling strength again. We had the UPS strike.
Yeah.
We've got Starbucks.
Yeah.
They're still trying to work on Amazon.
The auto workers and the auto companies have some nerve. This is an industry, the domestic industry, has in the last year, in the three quarters, the first, second, and third quarter, in other words, ending from January to October, made a profit of $32 billion. A profit. It means everything paid for, soup to nuts. That was their profit, $32 billion. But they refuse to give an industry raise. They refuse to end the lower pay for the new workers. They refuse to provide adequate pensions for the workers. What's their excuse? It's going to cost them a lot to invest in building electrical cars.
Which take fewer workers to build.
Yes, right. As soon as they build them, they'll lay off workers. Exactly. It's really an outrage that they should believe they can get away with saying it.
Well, don't forget the, as the auto workers have pointed out, you know, they wanted a 46% raise, which sounds pretty high.
Over and, 5 years, not in 1 year, over five years.
But that was the raise that the CEOs got of the auto companies.
That's exactly right.
And don't forget, except for Ford, the auto companies got bailed out by the government.
Right.
And that was part of the taxpayer money that these auto workers put in.
And before that, the auto workers forego many benefits and many pay rises to help the company out.
They squeezed them.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't think the union should have done it, but they did do it. This is the thanks they get.
Right.
Well, it's an outrage, and I think they're right to strike. I think the targeted strike is clever, because that way they have a big strike fund that can last longer. Of course, they, you know, guys on strike, workers on strike, do collect from the union. They get strike pay.
Yeah.
It's not much. It's $500 a week, but it's better than nothing. And that's money that the workers have pooled to provide for this. That's the other thing. The companies are always, and their political and intellectual servants, are always talking about the union like they're the employer, the union bosses. The union is no more than a group of workers pooling their energy, pooling their brains, and pooling their money to try to get a better life. They're not a company with a boss. Now, there could be unions that are run badly. There could be unions that have been captured by gangsters. That's happened. But that's not the point of a union. That's not what a union is supposed to be. And that's not what all unions are.
There were company, you know.
Yes, there are unions that companies formed that as, you know, pretend unions. There's all kinds of rackets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But an honest union is a godsend. And although Biden and lots of Democrats like to talk about middle-class incomes, these are not middle. There's no middle class here. This is workers who are union members. They're workers. They're working class. And the reason that there was prosperity in small cities was these were union cities. They made union wages. They were good wages, or as good as you could get. And it was adequate to have a good life.
And, you know, even with the big companies, there was the secondary market of that. You know, a lot of the components that went into these cars were shipped to Detroit or Flint or wherever from these small towns.
That's right.
We had smaller manufacturers.
That's right.
Making different parts.
Well, and, it used to be that if the auto industry sold 8 million cars, the entire economy was fine. It was humming because all these subsidiary companies that you're talking about were working to produce parts and that the auto industry put together to in cars. Now they make 16 million cars, not 8 million, 16 million cars. And the economy is not so great because workers' living standards have not increased. Workers' pay has declined in the last 20 years. The real purchasing power of working people has declined. So Biden and the Democrats can say, look, the economy is doing great. A lot of people are working. But the people who are working's real purchasing power is less now than it was.
Yeah. Well, you hear this all around. Some of these striking workers said, we can't afford to buy the cars or the trucks we're making.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and we see that even with the service workers and the government workers where, you know, police or teachers can't afford to live in the towns that they're employed in.
That's right.
They have to live in the more outlying areas.
Yeah, the vision of these rich people is Aspen. They live in Aspen, and everybody who works hard to run the hotels and the restaurants and whatever else that makes their stay in Aspen nice can't live in Aspen because they can't afford it. They have to drive an hour to get into Aspen. That's what Brazil is like. Yeah. How about that for the future? The favelas of Brazil as the future for Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's also a parallel that the striking auto workers and the writers that have been on strike. And it's about technology. You know, we just mentioned the fact that when they go to electric cars, they're going to need far fewer workers. The writers' guilds are worried about AI and doing away with the need for as many writers, making money off the product, doing variations of the product that the writers create, and not the writers not having any getting any royalties from that kind of
thing. Because AI in its current configuration, the computer doesn't come up with new things. The computer takes models that are fed into it and does variations, but based on the thing that's fed into it. Computers, like it or not, are not people. They're not creative. They're just able to manipulate data in endless numbers of permutations. So some human being has to originate the creative work. But the movie studios don't want to pay them.
No.
Well, this is there's a housing issue that's coming up that hasn't come up yet, but it's coming up. The landlords in New York State, there's rent control. But in other words, landlords are not allowed to raise their rents in an unconscionable way. It's a regulated market. And there are 900,000 apartments that are covered that way out of all of the millions of apartments in New York. But 900,000 apartments is 1.5 million human beings, more or less. Well, the landlords hate rent control. And they've been fighting against it since its inception, which is about 90 years ago. And currently there's a Supreme Court case. Whether the Supreme Court will take it up, we'll know in 2 weeks, that wants to abolish rent control, saying it's unconstitutional. Any regulation of property, according to these landlords, is unconstitutional. The market rate and the rent controlled rate, or the rent stabilized rate, are two different things altogether. A rent stabilized apartment can cost $1,500 to $1,800 a month, and the exact same apartment at the free market in the same house is not $1,500 to $1,800 a month. It's $15,000 a month today. I'll bring you to the building. So you're talking about evicting 900,000 families if there's no rent control. Now, how's that going to happen? What's that going to mean for New York politics?
Well, the question is, who gets the blame? And
where are these people going to go?
And what the people are going to, where they're going to go and what they intend to do about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's different than abortion rights. Abortion rights, they said, well, you thought you had a right, but that was a mistake. You don't have a right. Okay, you don't have a right. But they didn't say you couldn't have the right. But what the landlords are saying is you can't have rent control or rent stabilization. You can't have your rents regulated. So with the abortion situation, New York State, Pennsylvania, whatever state, could legalize abortion within the state. Of course, the Supreme Court didn't say you couldn't do it, just said it's not a right.
It's not right.
Federally. But what
constitutionally.
But what the landlords want is a ruling that says, no, you cannot regulate property. And if you can't regulate property, if you can't regulate real estate property, how can you regulate any property? How could you have antitrust regulation?
Well, that's going to be up too. Those are antitrust law has awakened a little bit from a long slumber.
Yeah, but they're trying to get rid of the person who's responsible for administering the antitrust, right?
Yes.
But the point is, why wouldn't they go into court and say, if Alito and Thomas carry the day, they take this case and they say, no, can't regulate rents. What's to stop any other group of property holders from coming in and saying, well, what do you mean? Why are you regulating me? Same argument, right? And therefore, why can't you have agreements in restraint of trade? You can't regulate me. Some can't.
It's going to be a different world.
If you get away with that, that's horrible. That's horrible.
Well, corporations are people, but people aren't.
For these property owners, people were born for the economy. The economy isn't created for the people, but the people are born to serve the economy. The people are slaves to the economy. They happen to own the economy. They're against slavery. You should be free, but you can't live unless you serve them on their terms, right?
Well, and it's... I was just thinking of something, and it just slipped out of my mind here. But, I mean, these are the same people that are pro-life, you know.
Of course.
But you don't have a place to live.
Right.
And you can't make a good enough living.
Right.
But we don't care. Once the kid is born, once we make you have the kid, then we...
No, because we have to have the kid. We have to have workers.
Yeah. There's all these... laws of unintended consequences. I don't think Alito and Thomas really thought about the revolt that would happen from women when they issued that the Dobbs decision. I don't think they cared much, but I don't think that they really realized the political consequences there. And don't forget, just about every election since has been affected by it. But there's other things, with these states cracking down on women and birth control and telling them that you can't go out of state if we think you're going to have an abortion and things. There are places like Idaho where doctors are leaving. There's no health care left for women. And it's not just for birth. I mean, it's gynecology. It's not just obstetrics. So women are going to be affected that way. And I was hearing something earlier this week. I don't know the exact numbers, but the birth rates are declining precipitously in some places. Women just aren't having children. And that has a huge consequence down the road for the economy. It has for society, it has a tremendous consequence.
So let's see. You've got to have workers to run the economy. Somebody has to work to pay taxes so that the old people can have Social Security, because Social Security is funded by current taxes. You don't have any children being born to replace the workers who are dying and retiring, and you can't have immigrants. That's a great notion. That's a real strategic plan.
We saw what Japan has had this problem of low birth rates. China, of course, had the one child thing, and now they're projected to be in decline.
Decline. Their decline is in their rate of growth. Our decline is really a decline. China is declining in the sense that they had a rate of growth of 7, 8, 9, 10%. Now their rate of growth is 5, 6%. Our rate of growth was 1, 2, 3%, and sometimes now it's -1%. That's a difference. Britain is minus. That's a difference. That's a real decline. And if you don't have a workforce, you can't grow. And not only can you not grow, you can't maintain what you got. And into this, in Pennsylvania, we get a guy who wants to represent us, coming from an immigrant background, Connecticut, right? A hedge fund guy, just the kind of guy you can appreciate the problems that the working people in Pennsylvania have, right? Dave McCormick.
Yeah, the world of hedge funds.
Yeah.
Where everything is a commodity and nothing has intrinsic value.
Exactly. Exactly.
This is the same thing that happened with... the Scranton Times recently.
That's right. You know all about that because you contribute to the Scranton Times. You know these people.
Yeah. As a matter of fact,
tell that story.
Yeah. The Times, as they've done to all these other papers, they went in and told the whole newsroom and the editorial staff, "We're offering you a buyout." Different amounts for different people. And in essence, it's a coercive thing. If you don't take the buyout and they decide to terminate you, you get nothing. And it's a double whammy because if you say, "I'll take the buyout," what they've said is, well, we'll decide when we're going to buy you out. So
that's wonderful for planning your life.
Yeah, people are working basically from day to day or week to week at best.
And I've seen the people who work at the Scranton Times. They're not old people. They're young people like everybody else. They have young families, many of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, journalism was a profession. It still is a profession.
Yeah.
But it's nothing compared to...
And this is a hedge fund that's doing this, right? This is a hedge fund who bought them out, and that's what they're doing. That's how they're managing it.
It's a subsidiary of a hedge fund, right? Yeah. And they've done this in many other papers.
Yeah.
Many other papers. By the way, Sunday, today is Constitution Day, and I do have an op-ed in the paper.
Well, you're not going to have it for long.
Not for longer. Well, maybe, because they don't pay me for these things.
Oh, then they'll have you forever. Okay.
Maybe I'll switch careers, you know, working for nothing. But anyway, you know, you talk about... These hedge funds and whatever, you know, this was the formula with Mitt Romney. What his folks did a lot, they'd come in, they'd buy out, they'd load up with debt. In order to pay off the debt, they'd fire people.
Otherwise, they'd have to spend their own money.
Right. But, you know, we're going to shift gears a little bit. But Mitt Romney had an interesting speech this week where he declared that he's not going to be running again for the Senate. He's 76 years old. And he started out saying that we need to turn things over to a younger generation, not just himself, but he included Donald Trump and current president Joe Biden and
Mitch McConnell. Some of the other,
Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, all those people. But he went further. Of course, he did say that Trump was incompetent. Besides being old, but he went further and he issued a scathing critique of the Republican Party. Now, if you remember back in the 2016, when Trump was running, he had a scathing critique of him. Remember the line, you know, his word is as good as a degree from Trump University, which is a good line.
It is, yes.
But now he said that there are whole portions of the Republican Party that no longer believe in the Constitution. And we've been saying that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on and he named names. And he said, these folks know better. He said, Josh Hawley is one of the brightest persons in Congress. He said, Ted Cruz could give him a run for his money. He said, but both of these men have made a calculation that they're picking personal ambition over their duty to the Constitution. And, of course, that was nothing compared to what he said about J.D. Vance, who, he essentially said the man not only knows better, but he has no character.
He said he was the worst man in Congress, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you follow J.D. Vance's political campaign, you know why.
Wasn't J.D. Vance at one time, didn't he pretend to be a liberal?
Yeah, or liberal values, you know, yeah. Came from the poor background and yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And that's what happens. And with the followers of Donald Trump, they have no character.
Well, they didn't have a character. They have a bad character.
They've made their calculation that's them over the rule of law or the Constitution.
I'm wondering whether they really care about that, whether they really oppose the Constitution. The Constitution helps them a great deal. What they hate is democracy.
Yeah.
They hate the Constitution when it's interpreted to favor democracy. What they really are against is democracy. If the Constitution is for it, then they're against the Constitution. If the Constitution is against it, then they're for the Constitution. They are for whatever allows them to rule. That's it. That's what they care about, right?
Yeah, well, one of the op-ed writers in the New York Times made that very point.
Ah.
It's basically about power.
Yeah.
And it is. They are against democracy. I've quoted many times David Frum's line about that if conservatives cannot win democratically, they won't give up on conservatism. They'll give up on democracy. But it's worse because they
and
really
it's, and it's, inter- it's an international characteristic, right? It's not just America.
Yeah.
They do this everywhere.
And it's not, it's not really true conservatism either. Some of the things that that they do, but it doesn't seem to matter for them. You know, it's devolved into just about power. I keep going back to Ruth Ben-Ghiat, who I quote a lot, and she laid out some things this week. One of the podcasts from the Lincoln Project.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, stunning as to how she said it. And, it's a world of plutocracy, oligarchy.
Just to show how the Republican Party is like this, they've been running the Congress, the House, now, right, all this year. Have they passed any legislation? I don't think they've met since July. They started to meet a week ago, or this last week, after taking 2 months off, and they weren't able to come to the floor with anything.
No, they haven't. They haven't passed. Well, the only thing is they agreed to extend the debt limit, but that was about it. Now they're going back on their word on that.
Yeah.
But everything else, and the word came out this week that Marjorie Taylor Greene has been in contact with Donald Trump. And all they're interested in is political revenge,
right?
And muddying the waters, flooding the zone, as Steve Bannon talks about, throwing everything out there to get people to become discouraged about government and governance. And
wouldn't you be discouraged if they're the example of what governance and government is? You'd say, who needs it? Who wants it? And that's what they want you to think.
Right.
In fact, the Freedom Caucus guy said, shut down the government. Who needs it? Scott Perry, our own Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, that's his point of view. Shut it down. What's the difference? Who needs it? The thing is, if it works for you, you need it. If it doesn't work for you, you don't need it.
Well, but people don't realize there's a lot of things that work for them.
Exactly.
They don't attribute to government.
That's exactly right. You got it there.
Scott Perry's drawing a lot of Democratic challengers, although I think it's still going to be a difficult race there to try to unseat him.
Well, I don't think we have a movement yet in Pennsylvania that will get rid of some of the most reprehensible of the set of the Republican congressmen, and a lot of them are terrible.
Of course, they'll, but you get rid of one and another one seems to pop up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, that's it. For this week, that's it for this year.
It's a heck of a way to end the old year and start the new year.
Well, listen, reality is whatever it is. Reality bites.
Yep, and it's a time for, supposedly a time for reflection and to accepting responsibilities.
That's right. And Joe Hill said, don't mourn for me, organize. If you reflect properly, you'll want to organize. Otherwise, you're going to lose.
Okay, well, we'll see what kind of organization we have in the coming year.
In any case, see you next year.
See you next year.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.